Good evening. This is Thursday, October 12th, 26 days until the 2006 midterm elections. Just get me a effing faith-based thing. Eight words attributed to Karl Rove by author and former special assistant to the president, David Kuo, that could by themselves very well decide those midterms. Our fifth story in the countdown, part two of our look inside Mr. Kuo's extraordinary new book, Tempting Faith, written from his earlier vantage point as the number two man in Bush's Office of Faith-Based Initiatives. And though it's a very large tip, the Rove quote is just the tip of the proverbial iceberg. As we reported last night, Mr. Kuo is making several explosive claims, among them that behind their backs, the nation's top evangelical Christians were regarded with routine mockery and contempt by White House staffers, called nuts and ridiculous. We also told you that Kuo writes that the faith-based office was so starved for support from the Oval Office that it was forced to transform itself into a political arm of Republican campaign efforts. David Kuo is himself a self-described conservative Christian. His personal and his religious assessment of Mr. Bush is nowhere near the most newsworthy of Kuo's revelations in our report tonight, but it might be a valuable key to understanding this president.
When you accept Christ as a savior, it changes your heart.
To this day, Kuo writes, he believes Mr. Bush loves Jesus, that he is a good man. However, Kuo also writes, many Christians assume from his belief in Jesus Christ that Bush won't do what other politicians do, break their word, hide their mistakes, spin the truth, and that those assumptions are wrong. In Kuo's eyes, today's national Christian leaders are being used. They did not have the same shrewdness, he suggests, that Billy Graham had in the 70s to question whether Richard Nixon was using him solely for his appeal to religious voters. In fact, Christians who voted for Mr. Bush based on his religion may have ended up hurting the very people Jesus sought to help, the poor.
I urge the Senate to pass the faith-based initiative for the good of America.
But Kuo writes that when Senator Chuck Grassley tried to rewrite Mr. Bush's $1.7 trillion tax cut to include $6 billion in tax credits for groups helping the poor, tax credits Mr. Bush himself had publicly proposed, Kuo writes Bush's assistant told Grassley to drop the charity tax credits. The White House had no interest. The cuts Mr. Bush did want made things worse for charities. Kuo writes that the estate tax cuts discouraged charitable giving, costing charities an estimated $5 billion. The ultimate impact of Mr. Bush's tax cuts, Kuo writes, was to brutalize the very charities Mr. Bush once identified as his top priorities. After only a year, Kuo writes, charitable donations were down dramatically and some charities had shut down. Kuo also writes that the White House was more concerned with the appearance of doing something. He says the faith-based office wasn't even set up during the 2001 transition after the end of the Clinton administration. It was not set up until Mr. Bush took office and Karl Rove gave a transition volunteer less than 1 week to roll out the entire faith-based initiative. The volunteer asked Rove how he should do that without a staff, without an office, without even a plan. According to Kuo, quote, Rove looked at him, took a deep breath, and said, I don't know, just get me a effing faith-based thing. Got it? Unquote. After that, it was easier to push faith-based legislation rather than faith-based funding because legislation was a cheaper way to show the president was supposedly doing something. Bush assistant Margaret Spellings, now the Secretary of Education, asked Kuo for legislation and said she didn't care what kind. Any kind of faith bill would do, he writes. When the office got a substantive bill backed by every senator from Santorum to Clinton, the only holdup was a green light from Josh Bolton or Andy Card. They did not get the green light. What kind of bill did get such a support? Kuo writes the White House liked the issue of religious hiring, not because it was a real issue affecting real charities, but because it was divisive, and that made good politics. Tempting Faith also suggests that this Bush White House would use anything for politics. Anything.
I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the finger in their face and say, you helped this happen.
After those comments, Kuo asked whether Karl Rove still wanted to let Jerry Falwell attend the national service. Even while Ground Zero was still burning, politics still mattered. Rove let Falwell attend as long as he stayed off camera. While others wept, Kuo writes, Falwell laughed about something with another conservative leader. Spotting Barbara Bush, Falwell remarked on how frumpy she looked. Even choosing the new faith-based director, Jim Toohey, was an issue of politics. Rove put out the word that for Toohey to get the job, he had to get as many cardinals as he could to vouch for him. He did, and he got the job. Quo freely admits that he, too, is no stranger to the politics of conservative compassion. He writes he spent much of the 90s lobbying for it. But at the time, he says the top Republican donors had no interest in fighting poverty. They had other enemies in mind and told Quo they would provide lavish funding if the target was not poverty, but instead the Clintons. And Quo would know about this. By the early 90s, he was already a conservative insider, part of Jack Kemp's think tank, Empower America. To help bring about the 1994 Republican Revolution, Quo writes that he and his team taught more than 600 candidates how to run for office by blaming President Clinton for the nation's sad state of affairs at the time. Quo writes that they tried to ignore the fact that Clinton had only just started in office after 12 years of the administrations of Presidents Reagan and Bush. Together with fellow Christian Mike Gerson, now Bush's top speechwriter, Quo writes that he wrote political speeches designed to appeal to religious audiences, even when the speakers did not want to give those speeches. Jack Kemp, for one, removed religious values language from a speech he was to give to the Southern Baptist Convention. So instead, Quo writes, Gerson and Quo snuck in a few phrases that evangelicals would recognize, but lay people would not. Quo writes that it was a code that would continue to be used in speeches over the years by politicians including John Ashcroft, Ralph Reed, Bob Dole, and George W. Bush. The Reverend Barry Lynn is not a conservative Christian. He's a Christian, also executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and the author of Piety and Politics, The Right-Wing Assault on Religious Freedom. Reverend Lynn, thank you for your time tonight, sir.
Nice to be here.
If it's one thing if people outside their circle say to those of the religious right, you're being played, they want only your vote. Presumably it's quite another thing if someone perceived to be inside that circle, like David Quo says it. But is that presumption correct, or can even this book be rationalized?
I don't think that most of the people who would consider themselves religious right members or conservative evangelicals have any idea that within Karl Rove's office they are being referred to as nuts or ridiculous or any of the other language. You know, a lot of religious right leaders say to me that I'm either the biggest thorn in their side or the biggest enemy in their midst, and sometimes things even more impolite. But all I do is argue with them on the merits of issues, but to have the top leaders of the White House refer to them with this kind of language becomes a Judas moment, a moment where they feel betrayed, and they're going to feel betrayed as this story gets out more and more.
Apart from being an issue of faith and of breaking faith, this is such a vital issue politically. What happens if even a small percentage of the religious right reads Quo's book or hears about it and says, I don't want to vote for these guys anymore? Do they feel like they have an option to vote for a Democrat or not vote at all? Or is the pollution, I don't want to say corruption, but pollution of their religion so pervasive in this case that they'll vote anyway for the proverbial devil they know?
I don't know that any of us know the answer to that. James Dobson recently, just about 2 weeks ago at a big event here in Washington, said that it was unthinkable to work for or to vote for the other party. But again, that's before this book came out and its revelations came out. And I think there will be a lot of people who have done what they did in past elections, including when Senator Dole was running for the presidency, and just vote for third parties or not vote at all. That's certainly the thing the White House needs to be concerned about as this book gets bigger and longer legs.
Yesterday, we reported Mr. Quo's claim that his office had helped Republican candidates in 2002 by holding these thinly disguised get-out-the-vote events in targeted districts. Did you know about that?
Yes, in 2002, we actually issued a report and floated it around, got some media attention for it. We found that these meetings seemed to be occurring in the very legislative districts, congressional districts, and states with very tight governor's races, where it made all the difference in the world to be able to go in, lure churches, even some African-American churches, into believing they might get some of this faith-based money, and then hope that they would be welcoming it by returning a vote for the Republican Party. It worked in some states. It did not work in all states. But I remember having arguments with Jim Toohey on television, in private, and at college and university debates, and I would tell him that that's exactly what his office was doing, and he would deny it categorically. I know Jim Toohey, David's Coe's longtime boss, for a long time. He's had dinner at my house. But when he started to work for the faith-based initiative office, he made a deal with the devil. Mm-hmm. He thought that he could somehow do the political stuff, the partisan stuff, and still help the poor. It turned out all that he was doing was being a cog in this political machine, and frankly, the faith-based initiative has caused fights among religious groups and between religious groups and secular groups for the crumbs from the king's table when it comes to social serving spending, and that's, by any standard, an obscenity in the wealthiest nation ever to have existed on this planet.
Are we, who view this from a political point of view or a administration point of view or a government point of view, missing the key crux here? Because it seems to me, in reading what Cuo has written, that his major concern, that those who went into this in good faith were hoping in some way to help the poor, and that the main betrayal here is of that principle. Why has it been so easy to win conservative Christian votes with issues that Jesus Christ was never supposed to have mentioned, like gay marriage, while turning a blind eye to his big issue, if you will, helping the poor?
No, it was Jesus's big issue. Jesus never talked about same-sex marriage or gay and lesbian rights. In fact, the whole Bible, there's not a word that condemns abortion. What the religious right has convinced people all over this country and their churches to believe is something that is an encrusting of their political ideas, the religious right's own political and partisan ideas on the words of Jesus. So their distortion of the gospel makes it possible for them to say the only thing that matters is abortion and gay marriage. We'll get to the poor some other time, but they never do, and neither does this president.
Reverend Barry Lynn, great thanks for your time, Barry.
Thank you.
A quick note about Tempting Faith and our coverage. The book is not scheduled to go on sale until next week, but Countdown managed to obtain a copy exclusively by walking into a local bookstore and asking for it. Got a receipt and everything. Today we contacted the White House for comment, but have as yet received no reply. We also have a standing invitation to author David Cuo to appear on the program. Our coverage of Tempting Faith will continue tomorrow. While much of the response so far is focusing on the ridicule of evangelical leaders behind their back, another more serious issue deserving further scrutiny, as we reported yesterday, Mr. Cuo claims that in a bid to prove its political value, the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives turned itself into a veritable arm of the Republican campaign machinery, using taxpayer money to organize events planned specifically to